Next up on the tee from the Low Country, Hilton Head, South Carolina, specifically, we have a world-renowned artist in the golf community. Her paintings rest in some of the most hallowed grounds in golf, from Augusta to Pebble, St. Andrews and back. She's been everywhere. Plus, she has created the Academy of Golf Art as well, too. It's Linda Hartog joining the Course of Life. Linda, how are you tonight?
I'm very fine. Thank you very much.
Awesome. It's great to have you on the show. I'll start with kind of an interesting question. A lot of our golf guests usually maybe have a club in their hands by the time they can even walk. But in your case, I'm thinking that maybe you had the paintbrush in your hand before the golf. So I'm curious, which one came first back in the day for you?
Paintbrush for sure.
So how young were you when you first started painting? And then when was it when you first picked up a golf club? What was the year difference there?
Well, I have to say, the paintbrush came way before almost all my memories. So it wasn't until I was about 6 years old that I realized that not everybody did that. And I defined myself as an artist from that time on. So that helped guide my whole life. I don't think I picked up a golf club until we played miniature golf somewhere when I was a child.
Nice. Yeah, that tends to be where everyone starts, is maybe mini golf or their local driving range or pitch and putt. That's cool. So you've had art in your entire life for sure. You did it growing up as a kid. You mentioned before we hopped on here that you went to art school and everything, right? Like that. I'm curious at what point, I usually ask the golfer this, but I'm asking you as an artist, at what point you knew you wanted art in your life? At what point did you realize that you wanted it to be what you did for a living in your adult life?
Age six.
Love that. It must have been a stern conversation with the parents at the dinner table, right?
It was like, you know, it's just how I defined myself from then on. And every choice I ever made from then on was, you know, revolved around that.
Very cool.
So it was my thing in life. And I knew it, which nice. I'm very grateful for. You know, I had
That's
a gift.
Awesome.
And I stuck with it my whole life and still have. You know, it's something you don't not do.
Yeah, no, and it's tricky when you have a passion like that and you kind of come into your formative adult years, you know, figuring out how that's going to work for you professionally. I know after you went to art school, you began selling paintings of your own. You then moved from Chicago where you went to school and moved to South Carolina where you spent the better part of your life now. I'm curious, what was that like selling paintings early on your own? And then talk to me about the decision to move to South Carolina specifically.
Well, selling paintings on my own was like a choice. That was the only way I knew how to make money. I didn't want to teach. I never wanted to teach. Still don't. So I had to find a way, and I did it when I was in Chicago to earn money. I did illustration for different newspapers and magazines. And then I actually would copy paintings in the Art Institute for people. And then I learned later, after I got out of art school, I went into the art fair business. There were some very good art fairs in the Chicago area. And I made a pretty good living from that. So I just learned how to sell direct. I really didn't. I did some work with galleries in Chicago, but mostly I sold direct, and I did a lot of commission work for people, you know, specific places. But mostly I was doing landscape and kind of Americana theme landscapes with, you know, barns and old houses and, you know, just interesting things.
So you weren't too far off from the golf course landscape based on that original work. I'm curious when that maybe did that stumble into your life? When was the first golf course landscape opportunity presented to you? The very first one?
Yes, it did stumble. I was in South Carolina and I was exhibiting on a red piano gallery on Hilton Head. And someone from Augusta National saw my landscapes, and the pros at Augusta National, Bob Spencer and Dave Klefke, they contacted me and asked me if I could paint a golf course. And I said, sure. So I went there and I painted the 13th hole, and that was in 1984.
And that was quite literally the first golf course landscape gig you'd been given. Is that correct? It was at Augusta National on the 13th hole.
Yep.
Which for our golfing audience knows is basically one of the most hollowed grounds in the entire game. So you really shot for the moon there on your first commission.
I was lucky. Yes, you bet you. My father, who was an avid golfer at the time, just about fell out of his chair when I told him. You know, he was like, "You're what?"
Yeah, Linda, no, I'm not going to lie. I would have had your first golf course landscape as maybe the local country club or you know, a 9-hole course down the street. But I wouldn't have picked Augusta. So that was quite the roaring start to the golf landscape career. And then so from there, I know there's a whole lot more on your website as well, too, for people who are browsing. It's hartog.com, HARTOUGH. And you can see all the paintings. But talk to me about everything that came from that day in 1984 and the work you've done with Augusta National specifically.
Well, of course, it was the first time my work had been printed. And that's basically why they wanted the paintings. Not only did they just want them, but they wanted to print them and sell prints at the Masters.
Okay.
We did. And the response was just overwhelming. And then I started getting calls from other clubs like Lake Nona. In the country club in Brookline. And I thought, there must be something to this. And then I went to the PGA show in 1988 for the first time. And then I really realized the market was just void. There wasn't anything there.
Interesting.
And I had a huge demand for what little I had at the time. So I thought, this was a thing I could do. I could bring fine art to golf. And
very
up
neat.
To then, it really hadn't been done.
And so Augusta National obviously found you first, but all the other courses came following soon after. One unique thing that's definitely a pinpoint in your career in terms of golf art specifically is having both the USGA and the RNA commission you for paintings for the US Open, the Open Championship. I'm curious, that process of a tournament that's doing annual artwork like that, of finding you and trying to showcase the tournament in an image form or painting, how does that go about? How long does that process take, them finding you and you putting the work together for the tournament?
Wow. Well, I started both those series in 1990. So I had to go visit the course, obviously, get my reference work, do the painting, have it printed, and then work out distribution of the prints. So that was a long process, needless to say, because there was not any precedent for the distribution of those prints.
Right.
Those avenues of distribution had to be developed from scratch. And fortunately, the USGA started their first merchandise catalog that same year, 1990. So the prints were in there, in their catalog, and that really helped, you know, start that distribution process. But a lot of it was just plain word of mouth or being at the actual event and selling direct once again.
Yeah.
And at this time, I was still working with Augusta, too. So I was working at the Masters, and soon I was working at... Well, we did a couple of times. We worked at the Open Championship, and I started working at the merchandise tent at the U.S. Open in 1996, because I really hadn't developed that much yet either. as far as what they have now. It's like this enormous merchandise thing. Yeah, but back then, it was just a little tent.
Oh, yeah. The golf course and golf tournament merchandise has taken off tremendously, not only with the USGA, but Augusta, too. We talk every year about how legendary the Augusta National merch is, and to see those paintings there, that's quite a treat as well, too.
When I definitely started at Augusta, the only place you bought merchandise was in the actual pro shop.
Yes.
A little hut outside. That they sold a few things in, but that was it.
Yeah, the pun intended, the landscape has definitely changed a lot in terms of what's available at tournaments for fans. That's very neat. Let's talk about some of the courses you've done specifically. We talked about Augusta. I always love to recount certain spots or moments on the course there. You've done the 13th hole, but you've done a bevy of other holes on the course. I'm curious, what is your either maybe your favorite hole to paint or favorite spot on the course specifically that you find the most beautiful or serene?
Well, I think Amen Corner, of course. The 11th hole, the 12th hole, and the 13th. I've done more paintings of those holes. I've done about 25 paintings altogether of Augusta. And that's just paintings now. I've done lots of watercolors and other things. But mostly of those holes. You know, I've painted the 13th hole about 6 times. And 11 and 12 numerous times. So, but you know, they're different at different times, different years. The bloom is different, the light's different, different angle. So it's always, you know, there's always a painting to find. Let's put it that way.
Yes. Yeah, we saw that last year when we had two different masters at two different points of the year. We saw an April Augusta versus November Augusta, and the subtleties are definitely there, and then they shine through. One other course I want to talk about more locally to you, which is a favorite on the podcast as well, too. We love the RBC Heritage because Harbortown is just one of the most elusively beautiful courses. I just think it really sneaks up on people in terms of amazing venues, and that finishing 18th hole, the iconic red and white lighthouse in the background. Talk to me about just that view and painting in general and kind of what makes that backdrop just so unique and quintessential to the game of golf.
Well, it has a little bit of everything in it, you know. It has marsh, it has the sound, it has boats, it has lighthouses. It's got everything. And then when I was doing reference work, of course, you know, when I do it, I may know what hole I'm doing, but I've got to find the right light at the right time of year with the right everything. So that takes quite a bit of time to get, you know, and I think the painting that I did do of it is pretty darn iconic. I mean, the sky was fantastic. It was late afternoon. There was a sailboat sitting out there. I mean, it was just perfection. And they use that image a lot, you know. I basically, it's on the scorecard. It's really an iconic image now, which it makes me very happy.
Very cool. Again, it's Linda Hartog, a world-class artist right now. Academy of Golf Art is what we'll get into in a moment to get this golf art out to the masses and whatnot. Some people want to know, you talked about how much prep and planning goes into these artworks. It's amazing how specific it is. Now, I want to know specifically when you're actually doing the paintings on the golf course, what are the toughest features or the ones that take the most time for you to complete and create in your works?
Well, I mean, the whole painting is, I don't think there's one part that's tougher than another. It might have more, take more times, especially like if I'm painting St. Andrews and I have to paint the whole town.
Yes. In addition to the course, yes.
And that tends to take a little bit longer time, and it's a little more tedious than painting trees because everything has to be just perfect. But, as far as preparation, I treat just about every painting with the same prep. That's being there, finding the right light and the right season. You know, it's just all part of it. I spend quite a bit of time. If I'm going to a course I've never been to, I like to see the whole course. I like to listen to the pros and what they have to say about it and everybody. And then it's kind of a group decision. And I kind of, I guess in a way, I sort of digest the whole experience and then come up with an image, I think, that really characterizes the course and what is most memorable about it. And then, of course, once I narrow down the hole in the view, then I have to find the right light and maybe the right season. So, yeah, it can be pretty expensive.
Definitely, yeah. So there's a lot going on there, especially with the light I wanted to touch on, because I noticed that some of your work, yes, it's done on you know, the brightest, most beautiful sunny day, but I also see some really cool depictions of kind of darker, more overcast settings on some overseas course and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Talk to me about the decision to paint when it's an overcast day versus a sunny day and how much the light takes part in what you do.
Well, even when it's overcast, there's usually some sort of sun light in that painting. The one that comes to mind is Royal St. George, because it rained every day when I was there.
Not surprised.
And the last possible day we had, I was talking about my husband and I were there, and we would go out to the place where I'd picked where I wanted my view, and it would be just awful. And so the last day it was raining, and I said, well, we're just going to go and stand there and see what happens. And we both had our barber coats on, and I had my cameras underneath my barber coat, standing on this dune. And sure enough, this little patch of sunshine came through there, and I tracked it with my camera, and then I put that all together in the final painting. It was just one of the most memorable paintings I ever did, I think.
Interesting. But much like the game of golf, it's that elusive hunt for that one moment of greatness, you know, that keeps you coming back. I like that you waited out and found that glimmer of sun. You need it.
Well, I remember, too, when we were standing out there for so long in the rain, the ranger came out. And of course, he knew us from, you know, being there for days. But he saw those figures out there in the rain on that dune, and he had to come out and see what in the heck was going on out there. So he drove his little buggy out there, and I just sort of raised my coat and waved, and he said, ah, okay.
Yep, just photog, doing just the artist doing what she does, just taking the best picture, right?
Yeah, exactly. And we caught the plane just in time, and I got my pictures, and everything was fine.
So cool. I love that story. Awesome. Linda, I want you to touch on the Academy of Golf Art specifically, because I have been absolutely fascinated with not only your work, but golf art and how it's being showcased to the world. Now we're seeing it a lot more ubiquitously, which is exciting, but what is the Academy of Golf Art doing to get golf art out to more people and increase the awareness within fans of the game?
Well, that's exactly why we formed it back in, I guess it was about 2003. There were a group of artists that had been some photographers that had been doing really fine art photography of the golf courses. And we just decided one way to wake up the art world that there was a genre of golf art out there, which they'd been kind of ignoring us, was to form the Academy and attract good artists and have a way of presenting the work as a whole and doing exhibitions. And we've had quite a lot of shows at different art museums, especially the Morris Art Museum in Augusta, Georgia. So we've had a good relationship with them and had shows during the Masters. And so it's just a way to bring that fine art to the golf public, you know,
Very cool. I love that initiative, and I look forward to seeing the society out at more events and whatnot, increasing the awareness, because what you're doing is absolutely beautiful. And these paintings belong in way more venues than just the clubhouses themselves. So I look forward to seeing them in more places around the world of golf. Again, Linda Hartog, world-renowned artist, joining us here. It's the Academy of Golf Art. She's a member of the Lowcountry Golf Hall of Fame. That's very cool. What was it like being inducted into a Hall of Fame? I feel like for anyone at any level, just to say you're a Hall of Famer, it's got to be quite the achievement, right?
It was incredible, really, because, you know, I'm not really in the golf world like most people would think, but yet I've been there for 37 years and a lot of other ways. So it was wonderful that they included me.
It's so cool. Very neat.
So thrilled. Yeah.
A couple of quick shots before we wrap up here. I want to ask you, outside of golf, let's say there was maybe another sport or a new sport that approached you as an opportunity to paint their landscape. What would you like that sport to be? Is there another sport that you're a fan of that you would enjoy painting maybe in the near future as well?
Well, the only other sport I can think of in relation to the landscape is equine art, which I actually did quite a bit of that
before. Very cool.
I went into golf. I did a steeplechase, and I was doing horse portraits, which were in landscape. But I don't think of a lot of sports where I'd want to paint the landscape.
Yeah, I like the equine idea. That was not even on my radar. So thank you for bringing that to my attention. I'm going to check out some equine art. And then as far as golf courses too, though, what you are painting, the bread and butter, what we know you most for. What's maybe the most paintable golf course that's maybe a little bit under the radar, not your Augusta or your Pebble Beach or your major championship venue, a paintable golf course maybe no one's heard of that you ventured out to?
Wow, that no one's heard of?
Well, it doesn't have to be nobody, but just is maybe flying under the radar a little bit.
When I'm in Scotland and Ireland, I see many, many little municipal courses and courses everywhere. Of course, there's so many over there. And they're all, to me, stunning. I just love the landscape over there.
Yeah, I think every year I learn about like two or three new link style courses over there. And I've never heard of this course by name in my entire life, but I'm looking at pictures and I'm like, there's no way this is also over there too. What a mecca.
Ireland too. I mean, they're just all over and they're just stunning.
Stunning indeed. Very cool. Wow. Linda, let's wrap up our conversation with our 19th hole question, which we love to ask all of our guests. I'm sure since you've been to all these wonderful venues in the game of golf, you've seen some amazing clubhouses. It's a two-part question. The first part being, what's maybe the nicest clubhouse restaurant setting you've seen at any of these world-class golf venues?
Oh, boy. Well, I think of great clubhouses, but a lot of them I wasn't allowed into. But, you know, now that's changed. But back when I started, you know, that wasn't the case. But I don't know. I like my clubhouse. Spring Island here has a wonderful clubhouse and great dinners. And you can't ask for any better than what's right here where I live.
Shout out to Spring Island. And the part two of that question is what is your go-to, your meal and your drink of choice when you get in there after a day on the course, whether it's playing, walking, or photography to get ready for a work? What's your favorite 19th hole meal?
Oh, oysters to start with filet mignon and maybe some Patron Silver.
Yes, that not only is that a great 19th hole meal, that sounds like a death row meal. I love that. That is going out with style. Very classy indeed. Linda, thank you so much for hopping on the Course of Life. Again, it's the Academy of Golf Art, and check out hartog.com. It's HARTOUGH.com for all of her work. Linda, yes, appreciate it so much.
Sign up for the email. We do have these guess the winner or pick the winner contest, so you can win a free print. So,
oh yes, we love picking winners here on the podcast. So we will definitely join that as well too, for some shot at free works from you. Thank you again, Linda, for joining the Course of Life, and we'll talk again soon.
All right. Thanks so much.
And we're back. Great chat there with Linda. It's incredible the amount of work that really goes into creating these stunning landscape pieces that she does. And she gets to walk on hallowed golf ground every day, pretty much.
Seriously, how about the hookup at Augusta? I mean, not only has she painted every hole in that course, check out hartog.com, HARTOUGH.com for all of her work. Buy her work. If you're in the mood, you can buy a Linda original for yourself as well, too. She's painted some of the most amazing spots in the world of golf. And like she highlighted, she's been everywhere that the game has taken her. Really cool conversation there. And looking forward to seeing what she paints next.